Thank you for coming to the show. Today we have some special guests from my band. Francesca Caruso is going to be joining me, playing violin, singing on stage. And then Mike Etten, who plays guitar in my group, is going to be showing off some of his new solo music. And then Matthew James Wilson is going to be interviewed by Jordan Michael, the host of the show. Okay. Now we begin. We're going to sing a song called Hearts on Fire. It's by Graham Parsons. It was released on his record, The Grievous Angel, which was released posthumously after his friends stole his dead body and burned him up in the desert. Now we're going to sing a Lubin Brothers song called When I Stop Dreaming.
When I stop dreaming.
first time I ever have wanted to die was the night that you told me you loved someone else and asked me if I could forget. When I flower unwanted in spring, alone and neglected, transplanted in vain to a garden of sadness where its petals will fall in the shadow of undying. Sing a song from Babe, the motion picture, about the pig. It was my first favorite song ever when I saw the movie, and it's kind of like repeated throughout, but then like the mice in the movie sing it together in the end in beautiful harmony, like full chipmunk up. And this is the best. All right. If I thank you.
I'm going to sit stand on the other side of the stage.
You look good.
What?
You look good.
Thank you.
I'm glad you cut your pony.
Yeah, tail. Thank you. For those of you listening to the podcast version of this, I've had a ponytail beard for the last year and a half.
I liked it while I was there, but I think it's a nice step forward.
Yeah, well, I went on antidepressants in the last month, and I was like, I should
that'll do it.
Not look like this anymore.
Yeah, wearing slacks and everything's shoes.
Yeah, my therapist says she thinks the antidepressants are working, and I asked why she thought that, and
because
she said...
Because you're wearing normal clothes. Yeah,
that's exactly what she said. She said you didn't show up in a sweatsuit wearing sunglasses at night.
Yeah.
So... I guess they are working. Yeah. I swear to God, this isn't made up. My ex-girlfriend's birthday was last week.
Okay.
And I felt weird about getting her something because we're not dating anymore, but we're still really close. Don't laugh yet. You're going to feel bad laughing.
It's already funny.
So I made a playlist because it's not like a thing that is like, you don't spend money on it, so it felt less weird. And it ended up being exactly 4 hours and 20 minutes long with 69 songs. I was so fucking impressed. The last song, that song from the Babe soundtrack.
Are you serious? Wait, the Chipmunks singing it?
No, with James Cromwell singing it. Right. Hey, James Cromwell fucking rules. Go fuck yourself, man.
He lives
in the town next door to me.
My roommate told me that the filming of the movie radicalized him. And since he's been arrested multiple times for like aggressively protesting animal testing.
Yeah, so he lives two towns over from where I live.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he lives in Warwick. I live in Monroe. And he gets arrested locally for protesting the power plant and shit all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he also is the person, I'm pretty sure, that James Cromwell is the person behind the... Defend Orange County Facebook page. I actually don't know what it's called, but it's a Facebook page that has like me and like 82 other followers on, and it's just like Facebook crank posts about local environmental issues, and I'm pretty sure it's James Cromwell. I don't have evidence. But yeah, I didn't see Babe until like two or three years ago.
Too late.
And no, not too late. I spent like an entire 2 week period of time. There's some like interview with me in like a student newspaper that it's like it was when I was living at Silent Barn, and you'd get a lot of like emails from college kids that like don't know what else to do for a project, so they want to interview somebody who works at a space that they go to. And I only talked about how good I thought Babe was.
Wow.
Not only, but it's legitimately half of the interview.
We're really just, on the same wavelength. Right
yeah,
now.
It's a beautiful movie. And
agreed.
Like the scene where he says, "That'll do, pig," that's all I want. That's all. I just want like a big fucking old man to tell me I did a good job. And then... I don't want the Babe 2 Pig in the City part. Cause
I've heard that's actually really good. Wait, but I'm gonna get off the stage.
Yeah, this is over. sorry, I'm kind of like freaked out that Doug played that song. I am shocked. I did not know he was going to play that. This is genuinely weird. So, guest on the show this week, Matthew James Wilson. He runs Forge Arts Mag. He also is the label manager of Danger Collective. Matt, you want to come up? Do you want to sit or stand?
If you're going to stand. I feel weird about sitting if you're going to stand, but yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Okay, here's what I want to know about you. Is it hard to like stuff when you spend so much time facilitating and curating things? Does that make it harder or easier to like stuff?
That's a great question. I feel like for... doing stuff, I think that I just try to always change what it is that I'm interested in or that I'm working on so that I don't feel really burnt out on things. And I think that there's like, you cross a certain threshold in researching or being interested in something where you can sort of degrade your idea of the magic of it, or the sort of exciting aspects of it start to disappear once you know like how that person feels about the thing that they made, or how the people around them feel about it, or once you figure out that they're inspired by this other thing. And I think for the most part, I try to like better understand something, and I always try to come at it from a perspective of sympathy, so that I'm not judging it, or I'm not putting it on a pedestal. I try to like humanize the person, or I try to, in interviewing somebody, I always really want them to think about their work in a way that they maybe didn't before talking to them. And I think because of that, that makes it a lot easier to not get sick of it, or not burn yourself out too much.
Do you think that things are great less than you used to? How do you fight against just thinking that like everything's like fine? Like seeing a piece of work that somebody made, or listening to a new band and being like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Like how do I
feel excited still, or like,
yeah.
How, yeah. That is always hard. I feel like it's interesting. I like moved from New York to LA like last year, and I feel like there is definitely a lot of things with, I know it's not a popular opinion to share in New York, but I think that there is a lot of things where it was exciting to be able to go to a new place, or to, I feel like I've always had like a lot of like older friends than me. And I think that having, seeing a lot of people going through something and then coming to an end with their own practice, or a scene coming to an end on the basis of like a venue closing, or a space no longer existing, or people sort of like retiring from whatever impossible thing that they did for a really long time. But yeah, I don't know. I try to maintain some optimism, or I try not to, anytime that I don't think I ever get upset about not liking something, or like not understanding something. I think that I only get upset when it's clear that the person who's doing it is like, they're doing it for the wrong reason, or they,
what's the wrong reason?
Yeah. I don't want to like put anybody on blast or anything, but
in general,
I think that like, there's like I think that with anything that someone's doing, there's a degree of like self-awareness that is beneficial to have, because you sort of understand what you're communicating, or what you're bringing to the table, or what you're doing. And then there's a degree of self-awareness that causes people to, I think, be so focused on what other people on the outside are seeing or thinking. And that can really destroy your own relationship to your own voice.
You're talking about clout chasers.
Yes. Clout chasers is probably the easiest description for it. But yeah, I don't know. But to like get back to your like first question, there is something that somebody said to me like years ago that has like still really haunted me, which was that if you you can't dissect something without killing it. And I think that that's maybe like the threshold that I try to avoid reaching with anything that I'm excited about. Is I never really want to know so much or feel so embedded in something that my idea of the thing is destroyed, or I like see how the sausage is made.
Has that happened?
Maybe. I don't know. I think
the answer is yes.
Yes, definitely.
If that's your response, the answer is yes.
I think that it's never happened in a way where I suddenly feel like mistrusting, or I feel like foolish for liking the thing. Like, I think that everything has value, and even stuff that my opinion of it has changed, the experience of talking to that person or studying that thing has been beneficial overall. But I think that there's definitely things that I maybe was more naive when I first approached something, or I maybe didn't understand the other implications for something to exist. And I think that that is ultimately, can be discouraging once you start to realize like how the pieces fit together, or why something is the way that it is. If you just assume that it was magic, or that it was like purely good.
No such thing as magic.
Yeah.
Sadly. You work in a variety of mediums. not talking your individual practice, but in terms of how you facilitate other people's work. The magazine is largely digital, although you just put out a physical edition of like a variant of it. You work for a label. You put out physical stuff, but I'm guessing most of your income is probably from digital stuff.
I would say that the entire time that I've done any project that I've done, I've either been a full-time student or had a full-time job in it. And so the stuff that is income is typically work in service of somebody else, whether it's having a job or if it's doing freelance like photography or writing, or I try really hard actually to not make that much of my personal practices be something that I'm worried about income from, because I think that ultimately changes who I include in it and how I approach it.
Is there a bigger divide between working on something that is meant to be consumed physically versus digitally? Or is there a bigger divide between that or doing something as a personal project versus doing something for income? Where is the gap widest?
Yeah, I think that the physical goods or stuff that is meant to be a physical thing, ultimately there's like experiential changes from like doing the new newspaper project that I did. I wanted to do something that was free, like the online magazine, but the fact that someone has to like find the thing to ingest all the information and content in it, or the fact that there's no comment section, or the fact that there's all these things about the digital experience of interacting with it that has changed, I think is beneficial or allows me to think about it really differently. And it allows me to think about the role in someone's life rather than someone seeing something at like 1 a.m. while they're on the toilet and then being like,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with it. But maybe when it's your baby that you've spent months and months on, it doesn't feel as great knowing that that's like the interaction that the other person has.
Do you think you can control that?
Absolutely not. No. And I think that like the benefit of a physical thing is like, hopefully that person will read it before or after that, or they'll like be able to consume it at not like the one time that they end up seeing a thing on a feed.
I say control, I mean like just the way a lot of culture is trending. There will be less and less physical and more digital.
Yeah. I think that the other relationship to it though is like the commitment and the sacrifice of a lot of physical stuff ends up removing a lot of the like lack of preciousness and the freedom of a digital thing. So at the same time as there are those benefits, a digital thing like doesn't produce waste, and the digital thing doesn't have the same consequences, or I don't necessarily have the same fears about the, I don't know, there's some of the longevity is like more existing with the digital thing, but then for a lot of it, it's just not.
Wait, so does digital have more or less longevity?
I think that it has more longevity if somebody is seeking it out, but less longevity if somebody doesn't care or like is on their toilet and like scrolling through a stream. And I think that I think that a lot of people use the internet in a way that is like, there's all these eyeballs on here. Like, how do I get every single person to see my thing? And how do I make something that is enjoyable for every single person? Whereas when you sort of accept some degree of limitation or you make some sort of barrier for somebody to get into it, their attitude about it or the value that they have with that thing totally changes for them.
I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit.
Cool.
this question is kind of a false binary a little bit. Just play along.
Yeah, it's a trick question.
It's not a trick question, but I'm phrasing it as a binary because I'm interested in what your priorities are. Mm-hmm. When you're thinking about which artist to work with, are you thinking about their art? Are you thinking about your taste? Or are you thinking about who your audience is going to be?
Interesting. I think all of those end up factoring into it. I think that there's...
Nope, binary. Got to pick.
One or the other.
I'm fucking with
you. I think that there's different aspects of it. Like, I think in some cases, you do need to... I think for the most part, I try to find people that I don't understand, or like people who there is some knowledge or experience or something that I don't have any context for, or I would like to learn more about. And so being able to ask somebody, I don't ever want to ask somebody questions that I like know the answer to, or that I have some idea of the answer of, because I think that that's also when you start making stuff or involving people in something that you have an agenda with, you're ultimately using that person much more than like featuring that person or benefiting them.
So, do you think you end up learning more about the other person's work, or do you think you end up learning more about yourself and what you think about things?
I think if I read my magazine, I'd probably learn more about myself. Or I think if I like went back, I still haven't really ever gone back to an issue and been like, oh wow, this was great, or oh wow, I'm so embarrassed. But I think that I always try to find people that I don't really know or understand or have, like, who seem to have an experience or knowledge that I'm missing. And there obviously is certain things where finding somebody with more visibility and putting them next to somebody who has not a lot of visibility is more beneficial to both parties, because for the person who doesn't have very much visibility, it maybe new people will come and find that, or will see that afterwards and will take a chance on reading about them. And then for the other person, it's like, rather than them being put on a pedestal, or rather than them having to feel some pressure to like have fully realized what their career is or what their point or purpose in life is, they can actually still be humanized in a way where they can talk about their practice the same way that something that they've been doing for 10 years is next to somebody talking about what they've been doing for like 6 months or something like that. And I think that that is more exciting to me than only just having like a checklist that somebody has to have to be included in it.
Okay. I hear all that. I'm unclear on which you think is more important. Is it the presenting? Is it just including an artist in something? Or is it the contextualization of how you include them? Which of those things do you think matters the most?
Yeah. I think,
and again, not a binary, but
yeah, totally. I think I don't really have as much control over the way that something is going to be seen, or the...
Well, you are putting artists next to each other.
Yeah, totally. And that is, right, that is, like, I think, a dimension of my control over that, or my... I do have, like, thoughts and decision-making going into that. But I think that, ultimately, also because it's a thing on the internet, I don't know how, like, somebody's interview 5 years ago reads 5 years later, or what ways that... I think that the context is constantly changing, and so because of that, I really want to... even with interviewing somebody, like it's exciting to interview a musician, like, when they're... right before they're about to be in a situation that's, like, seems like the peak of their career, or years after they're in a situation that seems like the peak of their career, or... like, it's exciting to be able to capture somebody at any point and see how they're feeling, because sometimes that day is totally different from even the day afterwards.
Let me rephrase this.
Yes.
Is it more important to include an artist in the magazine, mm-hmm. or is it more important how you interview them?
Right. Interesting. I think that I don't ever feel bad about, like, not including somebody, or there, even if there are people that I do desperately want to include, like, I don't worry about not being able to have the chance to do it. Like, I never want to feel like I'm, like, collecting a bunch of people, or making, like, just, like, having some list that's like, this is so cool, all these people are involved. But I think that, at the same time, when you are thinking about how to frame an interview, or, what what thing that you are featuring by that person, I think that my priority is much more getting somebody to, I don't know. I think that I would rather have an honest portrayal of somebody that I think is interesting than to have like the perfect interview with somebody that is really successful or that I look up to a lot. Cause I don't think that I don't know how much that really like helps that person. And I don't know how much that helps somebody who's inspired by that person or I don't know how different that is from what any other person could be doing working for a company or featuring somebody in their project.
Do you ever have a hard time not just like asking dumb questions
to people?
This is like your interviews are really thoughtful, and it made me feel kind of insecure because whenever I'm talking to somebody, especially if it's somebody who makes something, my gut instinct is to like never talk about what they do. But I always just like want to ask people like where they posted online when they were teenagers and what their username was.
Totally.
And I also like just want to be like, do you like doing this?
Yeah.
But like you can't ask, you can't like, there's a certain level of somebody does something and you like it a lot and it makes you feel intimate with them. So you want to ask dumb questions because sharing dumb information is intimacy, but you can't just
totally
do that. So you end up at like being professional and asking smart questions. But do you ever just like want to figure out if you'd be friends with somebody?
Yeah, totally. And I think that is fair. And I think that there are some dumb questions I have asked people. I'm sure if I looked back, I would regret some things. But I think about that much more in the editing process, where I think a lot of people say stuff that is revealing of who they are, what their personality is, that a lot of interviews or features who are worried about a word count or worried about like how much paper or space on a website it's going to fill would just be like, get rid of that. Like, that's not useful. Like, who cares about what
but
that
your,
person
your
ate?
Personal gut, is it to lean into it or not?
Yeah, I think that I try to like leave in as much of that stuff as possible because I remember being like a teenager and like wondering what someone's favorite food is or like it being reduced to a level that isn't like them like having an existential look at their their practice. But I think that with the I think it's important to be respectful of people's time and to get them to be reflective rather than just like listing things or explaining stuff.
Yeah, not doing like the Chris Farley show.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think I sometimes maybe, and to the detriment of the audience, even of the magazine, I think sometimes I try to think about what somebody would feel interested in talking about within their own work. Or I think for the most part, the questions that I ask are very general and like super open-ended and not very specific, because ultimately each person I think is going to reveal what they want to talk about or what is like on their mind. And as long as you give them that opportunity, they're going to probably run with it. Rather than me having to do all the work.
This is going to be the last thing I ask you about.
Cool.
So there's this Russian cartoonist I like a lot. He's in the States for a few weeks and I've been like Instagram DMing him trying to like buy comics from him before he leaves the States so he can ship it to me for less than a fortune.
Yeah.
And he's like kind of hard to pin down, and I'm super into his stuff. It's like all these four panel comics that look like they were drawn in pencil, and they're all about fucking and they rule. And he's like, I think he's been staying with some people that I know in Seattle, so there's like some social connection. But I found him through the Discover part of Instagram. Like, his shit just came up. And I'm assuming that he came up that way because Instagram knows what I liked, who I follow, and it's not that hard to figure out that I'd like this guy.
Right.
Is that competition with what you do?
I think if I was making money and I was worried about how much money I was making, I would maybe view other things doing the same thing or cutting through the work that I'm doing and like monetizing it or making it something like that, I would view it that way. But I think that because I've like always tried to think about the magazine as like my own personal practice or like my own diary, and it doesn't really matter like who chooses to read it or what. I like want people to find out about new artists, and I want to like, I want the platform to be beneficial to other people. But I think that I also try to put enough of myself in it that hopefully somebody is starting to read it, not because I was like a convenient algorithm that allowed them to just find something immediately and have like direct access to it. I don't know. I think about that sort of stuff a lot because I think that those sort of algorithms have existed on the internet just long enough now that it's like had like lasting effects on people's view of reality and their understanding of
absolutely
what's going on. And it's exciting. I've been doing the magazine for 7 years now, and seeing how the internet has changed since then, I think is both fascinating and really scary. And I think that there's, I think it's only a threat when something like that allows people to feel really safe in them knowing what's going on or knowing what is happening. And they feel like, how could I have, like, what is this thing? Like if somebody comes across something that they didn't see on the Discover Weekly or whatever, or they're sort of, whatever the Instagram version of it is. If somebody comes across something that they're then upset that the algorithm didn't introduce to them or show them, I think that that is maybe more of a circumstance of people realizing that the reality that they surround themselves with is ultimately, like, if they're totally passive with it or they're not actually making an effort to find things, then ultimately, like, it's not bad that you found out about that thing, or it's not it's more so like what other things should you like, or that you could find out about that Instagram is giving you the idea that it's introducing you to all of it, but is like clearly failing to like introduce you to or give you like a way to think about it outside of.
Well, the reason that particular cartoonist sticks in my head is because I do have indirect social connections to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I discovered him through Instagram that matters, or that I discovered him and that it was through Instagram. That part doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The part that I discovered him before somebody I knew told me about him.
Right.
That's the part that I think is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people that maybe see the internet removing this gatekeeper role, and then they feel bad that like suddenly this thing that they've either spent all of their time and energy learning.
Gatekeeper.
Yeah, exactly. Like I totally missed the boat on being a gatekeeper or something. Like I think that I've also just sort of sacrificed the thought of that being a role that I can be in, or that's like a power.
Wait,
I have
so
over
what
other people.
Is the role you're in then?
I think that I do enough work outside of doing this that I have, and I have enough time on top of that.
No, but this specific role
with the magazine. Oh yeah.
If it's not gatekeeper, what is it?
If it's not, I don't know. I think it's more, I think it's maybe I feel sometimes in the position of being like a therapist to a lot of artists, and I think that if I can walk away from an interview, like I remember thinking to myself really, really early on doing it, like if I forgot to press record on this interview and none of what we just talked about is preserved forever, like was it worth it? Should I be mad at myself? And I realized, like, absolutely not. Like, I gained everything from the knowledge of that person, and that person then can reflect on whatever they said or whatever we talked about. And I think because of that, too, I've been able to develop, like, much longer-term relationships with a lot of the artists that I work with. And I've, like, learned so much that I've applied to my own practice or the work that I do that I think is, like, much greater than just being able to like be the one to say this thing was cool before other people said it was cool, because that like ultimately still doesn't matter, or the context of that might change, or if I was like if that was my only value, then I would
be totally happy with a computer replacing me for that.
Cool. Great spot to end. Mike, you want to come up and play some music? Oh, yeah. Now is the time to clap.
Thank you so much for having me.
Clap now, please. Thanks for coming, man.
Thank you so much.
I've got some songs. I play them like twice in front of people, so, you know, here we go.
Stay in the storm. born, but now I can't ignore the truth of.
Does it sound okay? Like guitar and everything? Cool.
Time.
of turning your evening. It's not like the season. It's time to hold on and ask right. And don't move that grin. Plan your escape and fade away.
Stretch out and leave one.
them all.
Perfect. Even better. Thanks, Jordan Michael and Doug.